It's Marketplace Tech for November 9th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. This week, European justice officials are headed to Washington to meet with U.S. government representatives. The topic? Data. This is following an October ruling by the EU's Court of Justice that goes against a so-called safe harbor agreement that's been in place for over a decade. Cam Carey is a visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. He says that ruling is about sending data back and forth across the Atlantic.
What I think we've seen is a real deep distrust of American privacy protection and particularly a loss of trust in the wake of the Snowden revelations.
There were hearings on the Hill last week about this. Carey says on the U.S. side, at least, there seems to be some unity on pushing forward policy that would allay European fears about what surveillance agencies might do with EU citizens' data.
In this time of hyper-partisanship, I think there was a lot of bipartisan agreement on the importance of sustaining global flows of information.
Tech companies, large and small, have been trying to understand how the European court ruling will affect them. Policymakers are hoping for a new agreement early next year. Now on to a different data set. Graduates of UC Berkeley's School of Information and Data Science have a project called the RAP Analysis Project, or RAP for short. They pulled in a ton of lyrics from rap songs to use machine learning to understand what has made a hit between 1980 and 2015, maybe in the future too. Tony Abraham and Nikita Cole are two of the researchers. Tony, tell me a little bit about how the data informs what hits.
What we had to do was kind of isolate the variables that were most important to this prediction. We tried a few different variables like topics and places, brands, vocabularies, and so forth. But what we found out was kind of the use of swear words as well as the topics of the song were the most useful in predicting whether or not the song would be a success.
Can you give me a sense of how this data might be used by rappers or rap producers or maybe other entities when it comes to making predictions about what might be popular in the future?
These producers, they can kind of determine, okay, where should I focus most of my marketing efforts? And then, you know, they can obviously decide which is the song that's most likely to be successful, and that's the one they'll release as a single.
What's the thing that made you, like, slap your forehead?
I think one of the hugest things was just how much profanity influences a song's success. It's interesting that it might not even be the topic of the song or the rhyme flow or, you know, how the beat sounds, but the actual just the words used in the song can have an effect on its success. And hip hop is such a lyric focused art form. It's interesting to just understand that there may be patterns underneath it that are kind of guiding us and into what songs we like to hear and what songs are successful that we might not actually hear just by listening to them.
Well, it's good news for those of us who have been skeptical of Diddy that the lyrics actually do matter in the end. Nikita, tell me if it changed after this project, but who's your favorite rapper?
I think through this project, we kind of delved into the history of rap ourselves. So I would have to say I've become a bigger fan of Tupac. Tupac was somebody that I did not listen to as much before, but now he's like, yeah, he ranks high up on my playlist.
You and many others. Tony, what about you?
I would say my favorite artist is Mos Def, now Yasin Bey. His album, Black on Both Sides, kind of changed my life. I wasn't listening to hip hop before then, and then after that I was like, this is amazing. I love it.
Nikita Cole, Tony Abraham, they graduated recently from the Berkeley School of Information and put together the RAP Analysis Project. Nikita, Tony, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
If you're a car company or a tech company right now, you're probably thinking a fair amount about artificial intelligence. So perhaps no surprise that Toyota announced a few days back that the Japanese carmaker was opening a new AI lab in Silicon Valley. Price tag, $1 billion. Dang. Molly Wood is our senior tech correspondent and has been following this. Molly, where did this come from?
It's been kind of the new black for companies to open a research facility, especially car companies, to open research facilities in Silicon Valley. Ford has made a huge investment, and BMW and Audi and other companies have been there for a long time. But this one is specifically oriented around this idea of artificial intelligence. So autonomous cars, but also robotics. And, you know, Toyota has a really specific focus here that's very relevant to Japan. And that focus is really around bringing mobility to seniors and creating robotic products that can also sort of help people who have limited mobility. That's their stated aim, is to try to work overall on these large mobility issues.
What is the difference, do you think, between a tech company taking on automaking and a car company taking on AI? There have to be some challenges there.
A lot of these car companies are having to stretch a lot. They're having to stretch their imagination, their idea of the kinds of products they build. And that's the same thing that's happening with Toyota. So instead of thinking of themselves as a car company, they're starting to think of themselves as the kind of company that would build artificial intelligence robots or autonomous vehicles that would move around a lot of different people. And it's probably the kind of thinking that they haven't done historically and that people within Toyota might be a little bit resistant to. And on top of that, Toyota has a reputation for being kind of the people's car maker, accessible, affordable vehicles. And so if they start coming out with these really high-tech, really expensive automobiles that can drive themselves, it might just not resonate with their brand.
Molly Wood, senior tech correspondent for Marketplace. Molly, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Ben.
I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.